seen the sky so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It is sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. Call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, hey,
hey, hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
It's just a sunny day.
Yeah. Hey.
It's the KSL Greenhouse. Expert tips for flowers, trees, gardens, and soil. Our hosts are Maria Chaleos and Ton Bettis on KSL News Radio.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us on this snowy morning for the KSL Greenhouse. We have brought in our tree expert today because trees are going to be probably one of the few things we're going to be talking about for the next few weeks. So with us this morning is J.D. Gunnell, who's a USU Extension professor. And J.D., our listeners know you, but thanks again for coming in.
You're very welcome. It's definitely snowy up where I'm from.
Oh, my. Where are you from?
Cache Valley.
Oh, boy. Definitely snowy. Yeah. So you said Sardine Canyon. It's snowing nicely this morning.
Yeah. It was coming down sideways, but I don't think it's sticking. It's too warm.
So here we were complaining about our drives, and you're thinking, oh,
this is balmy down here. This is like summer.
Right? Right? Well, one of the reasons we wanted to talk about smoke trees, which is the plant of the week this morning, is during the noon show, people have figured out, oh, yeah, she does some other things here at KSL. I got a text during the noon show that said, talk about smoke trees. Some people, we moved into this house, and they're way out of control, and I don't know what to do with them. But I think smoke trees, they've kind of become more prevalent in the last few years, maybe the last 5 years. But before then, people didn't really know that they existed. So first of all, Tom, you better describe what smoke trees are. You're going to let J.D. do
it. Yeah, I'll let J.D. take it.
Okay,
so
JD.
I'm sleeping on the floor. JD's here to do this show. So,
well, it's going to be a quick show.
Uh-oh. Okay.
No, so most people call smoke trees smoke bushes because they typically only get about 10 to 15 feet. So in the woody plant world, large shrubs and small trees occupy the same space. So it's interchangeable whether it's a smoke bush or smoke tree.
But I don't know, for me, if it's taller than me, it's a tree.
Right.
Just saying.
Yeah. And so, lately, last few years, like you mentioned, there's been a lot of new varieties and cultivars come out, whether they're the dark purple, like royal purple, or there's one called Grace that's got a nice mottled color of purples and oranges.
Isn't Grace the hybrid?
It is.
So we have an American smoke bush or smoke tree that looks very similar to the European species, but it is a little bit more upright and narrow than smoke bush. Smoke bush will get 10 to 15 feet high and wide. The American version, which is just green, is just straight green. And so there's a hybrid, this Grace. And what color is it again?
It's more of a chocolatey purple, not a really dark purple, but it's got some really nice fall colors that introduces some of the oranges and yellows. So during the fall, it's really pretty.
So I remember the first year that I saw these, and I thought, oh, my gosh, they are so beautiful.
Yeah, it's kind of like cotton candy on a shrub.
And then come the second or third year, someone planted them in my neighborhood, and I was like, that's kind of looking kind of messy and out of shape. And
yeah, they're a shrub or a tree that we consider somewhat rangy or floppity.
That's a good word, rangy, okay.
But in the landscape, you can actually keep them fairly tidy. I mean, every 4 to 5 years, they'll do what's called coppicing, and that's a fancy word for just hacking it down to the ground. And then once you do that, then it'll regrow from the roots and maintain kind of a better shape for about 4 to 5 years, and then you start over doing it again.
Okay, it is one of the more unusual bushes that you're going to see. And are those the flowers? What do you call the smoke-like looking?
It's an inflorescence that literally looks like cotton candy. It's just very smoky, fluffy. It's the flower, but then what most people notice is the seeds or the seed heads, and that's what gives it that smoky appearance.
Truly beautiful, though, and very unique. But like you said, if you don't keep it under control, then it does become it becomes kind of a monster of its own.
Yeah, I saw one in a commercial parking lot 1 year, and I've been watching it year after year expecting it to get really big and rangy. But it's a dwarf variety and it only gets 4 to 5 feet, so in my estimation that is perfect.
Well, that's something you could maybe use renewal pruning on, to where you're taking the old branches out every year, and that would keep it in check and keep it looking a lot more tidy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to disparage this particular tree or bush or whatever you want to call it, because it is truly beautiful, but you do have to take care of it as you do every plant, but you do need to keep it kind of maintained, or it does kind of get out of control. So what kind of conditions, Ton, does the smoke bush like?
About anything in full sun. It'll grow in clay soil. It'll grow in sandy soil, as long as it's not super salty. And so if you're living, you know, down my way, the Goshen Valley, areas near the lakes, or just valley bottoms up in Cache Valley, you can get a little bit clay and salty, and they may struggle a bit in that. But if they're not overwatered, I think that some salt they will tolerate. And then the other key here is just a lot of sunlight. They're related to sumacs and pistachios and a few other things, and they just like that hot, not necessarily dry, but just hot, sunny weather.
It feels like these started to come on as we started talking about water-wise things. Mm-hmm. Are they water-wise?
They are. They're considered very water-wise, and like Ton was saying, they can thrive in really hot conditions. The times that I see them get overly rangy and really tall and unkept is usually in a shady situation. We've got some in the arboretum where the other trees shade it, and it just kind of stretches for the sunlight.
Okay. I think people, like for me, I'm not sure exactly how to trim each bush or tree, or, I mean, even though I've done some of the Master Gardener courses, I still don't have a lot of this totally down. So I think people are just afraid to cut it back too much.
Well, and I shouldn't admit this, but even with master's degrees, we get stumped on certain plants, and we always end up Googling stuff because there's thousands of plants and each one will react differently. You can coppice or cut way back the smoke tree, and it kind of likes it. But if you did that to other stuff, it would
My Daphne would die.
Yeah. And other things like lavender or certain plants, if you treated them that way, they would die. So I guess that's why we keep talking on the radio and keep teaching classes, is try to get people feeling comfortable.
Continuously learning new things, having to research new things. I did want to mention before we go to break that there is the American smoke tree, and it doesn't have the purple color. It's just a green glossy leaf. But the American smoke bush or American smoke tree gets about 7 feet wide, 10 to 15 feet tall. And so it's a little more narrow, and it doesn't seem to need the coppicing. It stays tidy. It seems to tolerate not wetter conditions, but it just has a slightly different growth habit. But the fall color on the American smoke bush is just fantastic. And so, you know, you have the burning bush that are just that brilliant red. Well, the American smoke bush gives you yellows and oranges and brilliant orangey reds all on the same shrub. And so they do get a little bit taller, but if you need a shrub that's going to get that big, and, you know, a hedge or just an area of the yard that you need some fall interest, just because it doesn't have the purple leaves, it does have the same flowers, it's one I'd also consider.
Hmm. Does this bush need fertilization, a lot of fertilization or anything like that?
No, especially if you don't want to get too big and sassy, I wouldn't fertilize it too much.
Okay.
It's just like most woody plants. Most trees do not need fertilizer. They'll produce what they need.
Perfect place for this. I mean, if someone was going to say, hey, where should I put this if I want one in my yard?
So I actually like them as a statement piece. I mean, especially the new cultivars are so bright in color. I think this should maybe replace the Japanese maple.
Oh.
Especially some of the purples and the bright yellows.
Especially in situations where you can't grow Japanese maple.
Which is Utah. Sorry, there's always somebody that says, well, I have a beautiful one, and it's like, congratulations,
it's
most
like
of us can't.
3 in 10 that do that, and so, yeah, they're very beautiful for that, and consider the new cultivars that are dwarf, and because they're not going to need as much work as the taller.
Yeah, ones. I just Googled dwarf smokebush varieties, and Winecraft Black and Winecraft Gold are some of the smaller varieties.
All right. Plant of the week is the smoke tree or the smoke bush. You can find out more on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. We have our tree expert with us this morning, J.D. Gunnell. We're going to come back with your calls and questions, getting some questions already about the smoke tree that we will answer. Number to call, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500.
The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Tan and JD, our tree expert, in with us this morning. So if you have any questions about trees, JD's your man. First listener this morning wants to know if the smoke tree that we've been talking about is safe for animals.
There's mentions dogs, cats, ducks, chickens. As far as we know.
The question?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you should eat it. I don't know any... Like, the flowers themselves are very sticky if you touch them.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think they're edible at all.
But we also haven't seen hordes of ducks and chickens and cows and dogs dropping because they brushed past a smoke bush or display any propensity to taste it or eat it.
Yeah. I mean, puppies will eat it just about anything.
Oh, they will. We were watching our son's puppy this past week, and he just was biting at every plant in the house. I'm like, oh, my gosh, are these... poisonous, and I didn't even know.
Yeah, it's, I guess everything has some kind of toxicity based on how much you eat. But yeah, I've never heard of anyone trying to eat the smoke bush.
Okay, Sarah, I'm not sure we answered your question very well, but yeah, those little dogs will eat most anything. Next listener says their grandchild did an experiment 8 years ago with Fuji or Gala apples that they had, you know, bought from the store. Then they sprouted the seeds. Now, they say after much tender loving care, the tree is over 12 feet tall, but has yet to produce fruit, and they're wondering if it ever will.
Between 15 and 20 years is the average amount of weight for a seedling apple to bear mature wood that will make flowers and fruit.
You have to wait 15 to 20 years
for
fruit?
You do, from a seedling. That's why we graft them onto rootstocks, is the rootstocks cause them to produce flowers a lot sooner. And so that's how you can get an orchard going in 5 to 7 years into pretty good production, are because of the rootstocks. And so the apples also will likely come back as crab apples of some sort, because when we have our edible apples, it's literally from breeding programs, 1 in 10,000 that makes it to market. And so when you plant those seedlings, that's fine to do, but professors will plant, if you're crossing Fuji and Gala, they intentionally cross-pollinate them and then plant literally 10,000 seeds, get them up, graft them onto a rootstock, and then 3 or 4 years later start sampling the apples. And out of that initial planting, 200 or 300 make it through. And then from them, the next year, 25 or 30, and from them, 1 or 2.
So people get angry when they go to buy fruit trees and they're $100 plus.
Mm-hmm.
But legitimately, like Ton's saying, you're buying 20 years of experience and crossing and breeding.
Well, and once you get it found, you have to get it to market and you have to convince somebody to grow it. And then even with micropropagation, it takes years to get enough quantity to get it into market.
Well, and there's so much money tied up in all that research that actually the apples, say you buy at the grocery store, like Envy, Cosmic Crisp, those are what they call club apples. You can't even purchase the tree because there's so much money tied up in the research and development that the universities or
the breeding program
keeps the rights to growing it.
I know we get calls all the time from people who want to know how to grow cotton candy grapes or any of the latest things that are out there. And they're like, nope, you're not going to be growing that one.
Even when the patent is off and the copyrights are off cotton candy, I don't think it'll even survive here. It's a European cultivar. And honestly, good luck finding starts.
Oh, but it's so good.
It is. And so eventually, it'll be another 10 or 15 years at least before you start seeing it available to the hobby market.
Mm-hmm. And by then, there'll be a new variety you're excited about.
Okay. Well, but to this listener's question, should they just keep it growing and hope in 7 years they actually get fruit?
I think there's a lot of sentimental value in the trees, and they'll be usable trees, you know, as far as shade and even wildlife. You know, if the apples aren't very good, birds will eat them. But it could be that over the next 10 or 15 years, they find that the fruit isn't that edible, and they could be messy too. And so it just depends on them weighing out what their purposes are and then going from there.
Okay, here's what I love about this, because I am very sentimental about different plants in my yard. Your grandkids planted this tree. You're watching this cool tree grow along with them, and then you have this wonderful memory, even though you may never have fruit.
Or it's like a crab apple size. I mean, it's a one in a million chance because of genetic crosses that that fruit's going to come out what you think it will.
And if we're doing the show in 7 years, we want to know how this all went for you. Because what a great experiment, right? I think half of the fun of gardening, though, is experimenting. And if you have the time to put into some of these things and the space, why not?
Yeah. I tell people all the time, horticulture is literally 50% science and 50% art. And it's the joy of creation and development. That's why I do it. It's just fun.
Okay, that's a much better explanation than I give people for why I love to be out in the garden. Because they're like, doesn't that break your back? Aren't you tired of being on your knees? And I'm like, yeah, but when it's done, look at what I've created and look how beautiful it is. And then I walk by it every day and I enjoy it. That's tough, though, for people who aren't gardeners to really get. Because there is work that goes into gardening.
Yeah. And some people have passions in other areas.
And then I lose track of something that I was really passionate about and I move on to something else, which is also, I like this once I'm pulling it out and I'm done with it, right? We were talking about hydrangeas off the air. And I think hydrangeas are one that I have tried year after year, and people ask us all the time about hydrangeas. And I did want to hear about one. You were saying that you usually tell people don't grow them, lately you've had to change your mind on that.
Well, and that's the glory of learning, is you're always changing. And so hydrangeas are native to the Pacific Northwest, very acidic soils. And so they come here, they hate our soils, we're really high pH'd. But there's a lot of breeding programs that are introducing new hydrangeas. I planted one that's an arborescens called Annabelle. It gets about 6 feet tall, just naturalizes an area, and it's beautiful. There's smaller ones. There's one called Limelight that's doing fairly well. I've got a bunch of landscape buddies that have planted a bunch just kind of as an experiment, and they come through the winter just fine. Some of the new varieties, they're worth trying, and actually that's why we have botanical gardens. We want to be the first ones to kill them and try them out, and so the public can see what works and what doesn't.
Well, there's another species, panicled hydrangea, that does really well, at least along the Wasatch Front, and it has a more traditional hydrangea looking. The Annabelle has a poof ball, almost looks like a big snowball bush. Beautiful plant, but the panicled hydrangeas will, even the others, arborescens, they're starting to come in different colors. And so panicled hydrangea, you can find them in white or pink, but they fade to a rosy red as the flowers mature. And they do fantastically. Downtown Provo, the New Skin Building, around the Provo Temple, around the county grounds, they're all over the place. Both the arborescens, there's oak leaf hydrangeas, and then the panicled. So they just do wonderfully.
Okay, I want to continue this conversation, but we need to break for the bottom of the hour news. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. Text us, 57500.
The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chaleos, Ton Bettis, J.D. Gunnell with you this morning. J.D.'s here to answer all of tree questions this morning. And we've kind of hit a chord. A lot of people have tree questions. One of them, Derek, would like to know. He says he has two smoke bushes in his yard. Wondering when's the best time to do this aggressive cutting back that you've talked about.
Coppicing. I would do it in March or April. Wait for the coldest part of winter to be past us.
Even though we've been warm, I've noticed temperatures on the Wasatch Front next week are down into the 30s again. And it's just been a stretch, a winter thaw that is unseasonal, but there's still a lot of time for it to be cold.
Yeah.
But it was so fun this week.
Yes.
Just a couple of days to go out there and play in the dirt. And it wasn't, my fingers didn't freeze. I mean, not in 40 minutes anyway. Maybe after about an hour and a half, yeah, they would have.
But people do get a little premature happy about gardening.
That's true.
Yeah. If those smoke bush are very mature, there's no problem with getting a sawzall with a pruning blade or a small electric chainsaw and just having at it. There's, you don't need to be dainty with these things. They're just cut. How high would you cut them?
About a foot from the ground.
And just let them regrow. How long is it going to take them for to develop a new canopy?
A year.
A year.
They'll
okay,
probably push 6 feet.
Angry.
They'll probably push 5 to 6 feet that first year. I mean, it'll take a couple years before it looks back to somewhat normal, but yeah, it'll answer back when you cut it hard.
Okay. Next listener says they lost a 35-year-old weeping cut leaf birch tree. They're wondering what you would suggest to get as a replacement.
So
sounded like they really liked this weeping birch.
The weeping part. Mm-hmm. So birch are very water demanding trees, native to Alaska, British Columbia area where the soils are really moist. Used to be in the 70s, one of the most popular trees sold. And you don't see very many around because obviously we have dry soils. When they get dry, they get really susceptible to borers that will come in and take the canopy out. So do not go back with a birch. Because obviously there was problems that it died.
Even the resistant, borer-resistant birches don't really do spectacularly.
Well, 35 years is a long time.
Yeah, and that's one of the older ones around. And I would go with a species that's a little bit more adapted, like a beech. They have a purple fountain beech. There's a lot of, we've been talking about plant breeding and all the cool new plants coming out. There's a ton of weeping varieties and columnar varieties because the yards are getting smaller and smaller. And so these plant breeders are breeding smaller and more compact type trees. So weeping beech would be an option. If you want the exfoliating bark, you could do a paper bark maple. They have a nice cinnamon colored exfoliating bark.
And great fall color.
Yeah, there's a new one that J. Frank Schmidt's coming out with called Copper Rocket. That's just phenomenal. It's got a nice burnt orange red fall color. It's more columnar shaped. So there's a few options. There's always the USU tree browser. You can go in, and it's treebrowser.org. You can go in and type in your different characteristics you want, whether it's weeping, whether it's fall color, flowers. And the more stipulations you put into the website, the fewer options you have to choose from at the end. But it's a great way for people to kind of choose your own adventure as far as trees go.
So there's another text here, and it says, I have a very tall Wellspire spruce. What should I do with it?
Enjoy it. And spruce specifically don't like to be pruned. They only push a candle that's an inch or two long each year, and technically that's the only pruning you can do without doing long-term damage. I've noticed Wellspire spruce, if they're ignored, they do better. And so just, they are going to keep growing. They don't stop, but I'm kind of curious how big it is. The bigger ones I've seen are 20, 25 feet.
It just says very tall, so it's got to be up in that range.
Yeah.
So along those lines, there's one more on spruce. It says, I have two fat Albert spruce that are 10 years old, 9 and 10 feet tall. Is that normal? And any idea for other dwarf spruce species?
Yeah, so one of the older ones that's just a standby, good quality cultivar is Baccarai or Baker spruce. They're half the size of the species. Even Fat Albert, just as the name implies, it's going to be wider than it is tall. It's kind of the fluffy of the spruce. Baccarai is a little bit more layered, if you will. I just planted one at my house called Blue Diamond. It's a Dutch variety that grows, it's going to be about 20 feet tall, 15 feet wide. So those are some really nice ones to look for.
Baby Blue Eyes still around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Baby Blue Eyes. It's kind of shaped like Fat Albert. I've noticed that it doesn't have a very strong central leader. Even Globosa, it's a rounded form that's 6 feet by 6 feet. Montgomery, there's a bunch out there. But yeah, choose a really good. So when I found the Blue Diamond for my yard, I looked for a year at different cultivars because I wanted a very specific shape. Mm-hmm. And if you do some research, there's I almost guarantee one fits your need. Yep.
Well, and in the along those lines, I'm just conifers in general. You know, some of my favorite, when I say conifers, the pines and spruce, are the dwarf mugos that are tree form. You know, we used to carry one called Big Tuna, which I think is actually kind of a cool plant. But there are so many of the dwarf mugos that get anywhere, that are tree form, that only get anywhere from 6 to 12 feet tall. And it will take them years to do it. But, man, if you want an adaptable species, you know, it may get some spider mites in it or a scale that you can take care of, but there's some really neat conifers out there.
All right, we do have callers waiting. Let's go to Blake, who's in Pleasant View this morning. Good morning, Blake. What was your question?
Okay, can you hear me there?
Yes, go right ahead.
Hey, so I live in Pleasant View. I planted a Honeylope or Honeycrisp apple tree, or the just a common variety I got out of the store. I planted it 10 years ago. I've trimmed it, pruned it, sprayed it. I don't get any blossoms. I've yet to get an apple off of it. Or, well, no, I apologize. I've got 3 apples in 10 years.
So how are you pruning it?
So my neighbor is an apple-ist, dude, he says. And so I just whack it from the top. Anything that goes up, I cut off. And then I've trimmed it out from the inside, so the inside gets a little bit of sunlight.
And I would seriously consider watching some apple pruning fact sheets. And a lot of times, and it's not that it's necessarily bad or you're going to kill the trees, but we prune our apple trees completely wrong. That apple should be trained with a central trunk, and it should kind of be in a Christmas tree shape. And
yeah, so I've watched so many little YouTube videos on each year. There's like a new guy, and I'm like, I'll try that this year, but I've yet to get an apple.
Yeah, don't do that. Everyone's a horticulturist on YouTube, and you never know about their credentials. So, I mean, what I would actually do, and I've been wondering if you're maybe accidentally cutting a lot of the fruit wood off. And I would do minimal pruning on it this year, cut out all the water sprouts, cut out the sucker sprouts from the base, let it kind of reform and maybe attend some pruning demonstrations. I'm sure that the USU Botanical Center will be doing some that you can register for in your area. Yeah. Possibly Weber Basin Water will have some that you can attend to. And I would look at some of those, but I wonder if you've maybe cut some of the fruit wood off of it, because it sounds like it's either starting to or it wants to have fruit. But I will say that Honeycrisp is just not an easy apple to grow.
Yeah. And people wonder why they're so expensive in the stores. They're my kid's favorite apple. They're so expensive because they're hard to grow. And I had one in my yard, did the exact same thing as you. Didn't bear for 6-7 years, and then when it did put 5 apples on, my 4-year-old pulled them all off, and then
I know.
Yeah, so it's frustrating. So the other thing to consider is don't fertilize it. Cut the fertilizer out because it may just be in a very vegetative state of growth.
Okay.
Meaning the vegetative wood doesn't produce apples.
Oh, okay.
So stress all it. Right. Ignore it.
I'm a longtime listener of you, Tom. I called the Weaver County, and the gal's like, I don't know, call Tom. He knows best. I'm like, so hence I'm calling you. I have another question on a different tree.
Okay, we're going to have you wait just 1 second, though, because take a break.
Stay put.
Okay, all right. Thanks for your call. We need to take a break. Number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us, 57500. Good morning, and thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us, 57500. Next listener would like to know, they say their apple tree produces well. Most apples, though, have holes. They do not spray the tree. What should they use?
Okay, thank you for the question.
Let me give you a little more information. They say the apples have a black core when cut open, and they suppose that's from bugs or worms.
Yeah, that's the codling moth. It, if you don't spray your apples and pears, 98% are going to have codling moth larvae, or the wormy apples. And what the worms are doing, the eggs are laid on the skin of the apple and they burrow in because they're going after the seeds. That's why when you cut them open, they're black. So, Ton.
So, my soapbox here is that if you have fruit trees, they need to be sprayed. And you can do it organically, but they need to be sprayed. And people are like, oh, I don't spray. I'm organic. And my response is you have no idea what organics are. And I don't mean that in a mean way, but organically grown food may be sprayed with organic herbicide or pesticides. And so there are some options out there. There's spinosad is one of the best ones. And you can buy that in three or four different brands. The most common is Captain Jack's Dead Bug Brew. But there's other brands of spinosad out there. There's also pyrethrins and some neem oils and things. But USU has pest lab updates. And if you go and just Google USU pest lab fruit updates subscription, it's a lot to put into Google, but you can just use your voice to text if you don't want to type all that. But USU pest lab updates fruit subscription, and it'll bring it up. And Mara Murray, our state IPM specialist, will tell you down to the day when you need to spray, and you can use organic sprays, and if you'll time it using MARES timing tables, then you will get away with only having to spray three or four times a year, and you'll still have organic apples. But spray those apples with something.
Yeah, the short of the story is other things besides you want your apples, and so you have to protect them. And not only protect the apples from the insects, but Utah does have a flourishing fruit industry. And I've heard from a lot of commercial guys that backyard orchardists are the bane of their existence.
Oh.
Because they don't take care of their trees.
And so the pests build up in a certain area and then come into the orchards where they are trying to control the pests. And so, yes, if you do have fruit, it does take effort.
Utah County has a law on the books, and they don't enforce it, but there's a law on the books saying that if you don't maintain your trees for a number of years, the county can come in and cut them down because of our fruit industry. So the other thing with the apples I wanted to bring up, if you just want to stay pesticide free, the next thing you do is thin the apple. So you have one apple for every 6 inches to foot a branch. And because you don't have touching apples, that will make the codling moth risk less attractive. But you can bag the apples. You can buy apple bags off of Amazon. It's kind of tedious with larger trees, but you can absolutely bag those apples and keep codling moth out. It's just that there's some work involved to do it.
All right. We need to go to Anna, who's on the line, been waiting very patiently in Salt Lake City. Good morning, Anna. What was your question?
Hi. I have a mound out in the front of my yard. It's next to my driveway and next to the sidewalk. There's the matching one on the other side, which I've had a flowering cherry tree for 10 years, and it's done fine. But in the other one, we lost a beautiful hawthorn tree to fire blight last year. And before that, when we first planted our trees, we had a horse chestnut tree, and it died. So I'm wondering, am I doing something wrong with the soil or something, or is it, you know, is there something that I could do? Because I've got to replace it. It's out front. It's very, I live on kind of a busy street, and people see my landscaping all the time. And right now it looks horrible because that poor little hawthorn tree is really sad. So one, do I need to do something else with the soil? And two, what can I replace it with? What can I replace my hawthorn tree with?
Okay. The good news is it's not you. It's the tree.
Hawthorns
are just very,
you made
very,
her day, you know.
Very susceptible to fire blight. And honestly, there's only one variety of hawthorn that I like because I've killed all the others.
Oh.
And it's a cockspur hawthorn. It's a smaller variety. It's thornless. It only gets about 10 by 10, 12 by 12. But if you want something bigger to give you some kind of structured kind of barrier against that road, I would go with maybe a bigger species. My mind automatically goes to crab apples. If you want something more showy, springtime flowers, some fruit that hangs onto the tree through the winter. This time of year, birds don't have a lot of options. And I've noticed a lot of crab apples that have that persistent fruit is a really good source for those birds.
You know, one I'm a big fan of is Royal Raindrops. The fruit's small, but it doesn't fall. And every winter I can watch birds, not just sparrows or robins, but jays and warblers and things come in and eat that fruit off my trees. And they're red-leafed, not fast-growing. They're slow growers, but just beautiful. Yeah. Trees.
Now, one thing, if you do opt for a crab apple, there is a chart online. If you type in crab apple chart, it'll pull up a J. Frank Schmidt chart, and it has all the varieties. There's dozens, but what you'll look for is fire blight resistance.
Okay.
And you'll want one that has excellent resistance.
Okay. How tall do those trees get? 'Cause I don't want it to be like gigantic.
They're typically 20 to 25 feet, so they're considered small to medium.
Some of them will stay a little smaller than that, depending, and that chart's going to be critical because Marlee might be one.
Yeah, or Lollipop. There's one called Coral Burst that's a light pink flower. That's only 10 by 10.
Oh, okay. Most of the flowers that I have planted underneath it are they're pink and blue, and so that was... would be nice. Although the hawthorn tree was always with their reds. I didn't care.
You had a pulse scarlet, most likely, and that is the most horrendously susceptible one to fire blight. It's just like you plant one and you just wait for it to get fire blight, unfortunately, because they are beautiful.
Yeah. Another option.
You told me that 10 years ago, 5 years ago when I planted it.
Yeah. Another option could be a service berry. There's one called Autumn Brilliance that has a really nice fall color.
All right, Anna, thanks so much for your call this morning. We need to take a break for the top of the hour news. And we know we're mentioning a lot of different plants and trees and websites. Remember, you can always catch this show in podcast form and hear the entire show again. The number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. We'll be back following the news.